spotter on his headset, and during a check of his microphone, Larson said, "You can't hear me?" question mark, followed by the N-word. Hank Steinbrenner, the oldest son of George Steinbrenner and one of the four siblings who own the controlling shares of the New York Yankees, died today at age 63. The team said he died at home in Clearwater, Florida, due to a longstanding health issue and not related to COVID-19. His younger brother, Hal, was put in charge of the Yankees back in November of 2008. News, weather, traffic, and sports in this 3 o'clock hour brought to you in part by Schnucks. Schnucks says, we all know local restaurants and food producers have been hit hard recently, and as one of the few places still open, we are committed to supporting these local companies that need help from all of us right now. And in an effort to support them, Schnucks is bringing in more food from local restaurants and food producers than they normally would. But they can only do that if St. Louisans are choosing these local products in the aisles. That's why Schnucks is asking you to consider local food options when you're at Schnucks. Just look for signage that will highlight the local items in select stores. Support your local restaurants and food producers while you're at Schnucks. Schnucks, a local company supporting local companies. From the 590 The Fan KFNS studios in Kirkwood, I'm Tim Woodburn, and just around the corner is the large morning show in the afternoon with Franco Opinion.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear a pitter-pat? And that happy tune is your step. Life can be so sweet on sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the shade with those blues on the rain.
Not in the radio
I'm
business.
Not afraid.
Well, it's foolproof.
Shut your suck hole.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know what? You know what, Randy? That is not how you talk to employees. It's just not.
Wow.
He's unbelievable.
That was just terrible, terrible timing, Dan.
That was pretty good, actually. What happened?
That is not how you. That isn't how you manage people. I've told Randy.
Yeah.
That is not how you manage people. But
no.
He marches to the beat of his own drum. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to 3 hours of escaping all the political rhetoric and talking about nothing but the coronavirus. We're going to do other stuff. We'll touch on it because you have to. How can you ignore it? Glad to have you with us on this, the 14th of April, another sleepy, dusty Delta day.
Was it 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day?
I'm sure there are people who listen who haven't listened for very long, and they hear that, and they go, why do they do that? Why do they every day?
Because we can make your daughter mad. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That's about half the reason right there, because she can't stand it. So anytime I realize I have something that really irritates somebody, you go for it. You know, you use it. And other than that, I don't know. I don't know why we do anything. So welcome aboard. This is Tuesday, which means Dan Buffa's here in the 4 o'clock hour. And in light of the fact that so many people are watching probably, you know, 10 times as much television or streaming, whatever, as they normally do, we shouldn't run out of things to talk about. And if you have a contribution, a suggestion, something you've rediscovered or discovered to watch, either streaming or on regular old television or whatever, feel free to call and chime in. Does anybody have anything to say? Silence usually
think.
Means...
Wow, complete silence.
Well, if you have to think, that means
yeah.
No.
Yeah. I don't have anything.
I got a quick one.
All right, now with a quick one. Tim Woodburn, you're welcome.
Thank you, Frank. Just wanted to give a shout-out and a thank you to listener Randy, who sent us a really nice letter and supported Annie Gunn's restaurant with buying some gift cards. And just wanted to say wish you all the best of luck. We read your letter. We were all touched by your letter, and we hope you're doing well and your family's doing well.
Yes.
You bet.
Way
to go, Randy.
Tim, if you don't mind, I'd like to add to your
sure.
you know, your contribution to the Burke segment by saying that other listeners should take note of what Randy has done here.
Yeah.
Randy has given all of us a nice, and it's called generosity, and it's called appreciation of, you know, all the hard work we do, gift cards to Annie Guns. And I just think it might be something the rest of you listening might want to take note of. In fact, if it were me, I'd go, well, I'm going to try to top Randy. I don't know how much the gift cards were for, but I'm going to buy a card that will have to go above and beyond. Just something to think about. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we'd appreciate it, and we don't take that stuff for granted. So feel free to shower us with any kind of gifts. Gift cards for Annie Guns is certainly a good idea. And the reason I say that is we're on the front lines here Monday through Thursday. You know, other people not working, a lot of them, at home with their families. Yet here we are battling it out, running the risk of, you know, coming into contact. I mean, who knows who's been in the studios? But we want to do it. I'll just share something with everyone that I know we all, the four of us, had agreed to keep to ourselves, but I think listeners need to know this. We were given an order by the owner of the radio station to take the show off the air. Go home, shelter in place, if you want to use that.
Oh, okay. See you guys
tomorrow.
Be
safe. No, wait. No. Apparently you didn't see the mandate. Be safe with your families. And then it went on to say, it's from management, it said, it kills me to have to even read this. I'll read it verbatim. Who gives a damn about listeners? You need to protect yourselves.
Wow.
And go home. Do not work on the air. And then it says at the end, and that's an order. Well, we defied that order because, ladies and gentlemen, in our minds, that's all there is. Listeners, you. Knowing what we were facing, knowing the risk we were taking, we chose for the last 2-3 weeks to go on the air and do what you want us to do.
Yeah. Taking a risk? Of course we are.
Working without masks? Of course we are. All for you. If you'd like to show your gratitude with a relatively expensive gift, that's your call, and we would certainly understand why you might want to do that. Now, Tim, back to you.
No, that was it. I just thought it was a really nice gesture, and I wanted to thank him before it escaped me. And I know we were all grateful for it. We all read his letter, and we appreciate him listening. It's a very personal letter, and I'm not going to read it, but on the air. But I will say, it sometimes amazes me. Regardless of whether it's this show or other people that I know who watch certain TV shows or watch televangelists, for God's sake, or listen to other radio shows or whatever, it amazes me sometimes the connection that listeners have with a host or with a show.
You realize what you just did? I don't think you did. You said, or televangelist, for God's sake.
Yeah, I know.
See the tie-in?
I did that on purpose.
See the tie-in?
I did it on purpose.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
That you knew
good.
That?
I see what he did.
Mm-hmm.
I see, yeah, I caught it.
Otherwise, why would I? That's why I didn't say or radio host, for God's sake. No. That would have made any sense.
Wouldn't have been the same.
Wouldn't have made sense. No.
True.
No. So
that's true.
You know, it was cool. It was a cool letter to read.
Okay. Thank you, Randy.
Speaking of a
televangelist, is this Burke segment? Dan?
I guess it is. Speaking of a televangelist,
Well, Tim, were you finished?
Yes, I am. And Dan rudely started to speak before you introduced him.
Well, he started without checking to see if you're finished.
Yes, I'm finished.
Kind of well.
Okay. Now, Dan Strauss, everybody, Mr. Interrupter, go ahead, Dan.
Thanks so much, Frank. Moo.
I get it.
Speaking of televangelists, that there was a guy. It's just going around on Facebook, and I wish I could bring the video up just to hear this guy. And I'll try and find it for maybe tomorrow or something like that. But he was on TV, and there were probably 4 other guys on the stage with him, and he's doing a thing online to his, but he's one of those healers also, And he said...
One guy with four people in the crowd?
Yeah, four people. No, four people up on stage with him. Okay. They were up on stage with him.
And by the way, I might add, that's not an easy thing to do, because you got to put your hand on their forehead and they fall backwards. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To do that online,
Christ
that's...
into him.
Well,
that's tough to do online.
But this is what he did online. He blew COVID-19 away with God's breath or something like that.
Wow. Wow. Thank you, Pastor.
Like with a leaf blower?
Yeah.
No, thank you, with Pastor. His mouth.
Always.
He went like this. He went like that. And he said, COVID-19, coronavirus is gone. And it will never come back.
I believe it.
I need to hear.
That reminds me of the scene in The Green Mile when the big black guy in prison gave mouth-to-mouth to Tom Hanks when he was dying of cancer. You know, when he blew all that into him, right?
Oh, yeah.
What was that? Looked like bumblebees or honeybees.
They were flies.
That was like the disease or something. Yeah. Or the
that
evil.
Was the darkness.
Yeah.
The evil, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well... Man, Dan, I'm so glad you shared that, because I thought this coronavirus was still around, but apparently, according to the pastor, it's gone.
Yeah, we can get.
Thank you, Jesus.
Fine.
Thank you, Reverend. Yeah, good to know.
Lord above.
We have a phone call, and Brad has something that I think is very interesting.
Well, if you think it's interesting, I think everyone would think it was interesting. Let's talk to Brad. Brad, welcome to 590 The Fan. How are you?
I'm doing great, Frank. How about yourself?
Let me check. Hang on. Yep, doing pretty well.
All right, good to hear. So I was on the internet with my free time I have and saw a story about a man in Indiana who went to pull out $200 from his account, you know, thinking that he had received his surplus or whatever you want to call it that the government's giving out. And
this
noticed
is the
that he had
stimulus,
over $8 million in his account.
What? How much? How much?
8 million.
8.2.
Yeah, I think it was eight point two. I saw that story. wow. Merry Christmas and happy whatever to that guy.
But then they took it out.
Yeah, they always do that.
Sad ending to that story.
His 2020 taxes are gonna suck.
They did take it out.
It's cruel, Dan, what they did. They show him that he has the money, and then they just take it right away from him. It's cruel. I could give somebody a heart attack.
Do you know that's a criminal offense? People have been prosecuted for that happening to them in this country, for having a bank error in the hundreds of thousands of dollars come into their account, and then they go and blow the money, and then they get prosecuted for spending the money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, they should. Yeah. They should. It's not your money, and you know it's not your money. There's no way you don't know that, and they're idiots if they think that they can spend it and not get caught. They should get prosecuted. Now, we saw that story, Brad. That it would be tempting for a second when you look at your bank balance and go, I wonder if they'll ever catch this. Well, obviously they did. They caught it the next day. So, was there anything else?
That's all I had. I just wanted to maybe brighten up someone's day, thinking maybe they could become a multimillionaire overnight.
Wow. Not exactly the way it works, but I saw the story. Thank you. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.
That happened within the last year. I forgot where it was. It wasn't 8 million, but it was in the hundreds of thousands. And the person did what Tim just said. They went out and bought a couple cars. And then, of course, ended up, I think, going to jail because they couldn't. They could not give it back. They'd already blown a lot of it. A lot of it went to casinos and stuff. Yeah, they prosecuted him. You can't do that. Is that it for the Berkshire?
Well, just one other thing. You've been asking for some data on whether this is going to cause more babies to be born or more divorces to be filed. And I've been waiting for a story to come out either way.
That's what's happening right now.
And just today, Jefferson County Sheriff Dave Marshak, in a press release, says there is from March of 2019 to March of 2020, there is a 43% increase in domestic violence cases in his county.
That doesn't surprise me.
43%?
It's one or the other. You end up making love all the time or you beat each other to death. I mean, you're cooped up together, so I guess this will be the test of your relationship. Are you going to fight or are you going to do it?
Well, think about it, though. And now the mayor and the county executive are saying mid-May, and this only started on March the 20th, so we're not even to the halfway point of the stay-at-home order. We have another long, minimum 30 more days of this.
Now, where'd you get that date?
I read the news every day. I know what time that I know what date the stay-at-home order was issued. I know what date they ordered the restaurants to close was Thursday, March 19th, and so Friday the 20th was the date that basically this all sort of began.
Yeah.
Today's the 14th. So that's 34 days, and now they're saying till mid May, and today's right. only the 14th. That's another 30. And you know it's going to go longer.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
of course.
It's
just, and here, I think it's like, going to go to the beginning of June.
I don't pay any attention to any of it because it changes day to day. They don't know. They have to throw something out there. It's like the 10-day weather forecast. You know, let's take a look at 10 days from now. I don't pay a lot of attention to it. We'll see. I hope not. I hope that they all of a sudden go, wow, look at this. This thing is just, the numbers are falling dramatically. Let's everybody back to work and go back to the movies. I don't think that's going to happen, but that would be great. Here's the deal. There's nothing we can do, but we just ride it out. If it's 10 more days or 10 more months, that would be horrible. We just roll with it. So I don't know. I guess I don't pay as much attention maybe as I should, because you get overloaded with information and a lot of it is contradictory. So what do you know? Is this Burke segment?
Yeah, I guess so. I found the televangelist.
Oh, okay,
that
great.
Is gonna blow
I want to hear this.
Yeah. You ready?
Yeah. I'd love to hear it. A lot better.
COVID-19. The wind of God. On you. You are destroyed forever. And you will never be back. Thank you, our God.
Thank you, our God.
Kenneth Copeland.
Let it happen.
That's Ken Copeland?
Yeah.
One of the most despicable evangelists ever to get behind a pulpit is Ken Copeland. Yeah.
Wow.
That does not surprise me at all. By the way, Ken, from the sound of your voice, all the COVID decided to
go in
your throat. It sounded like you got all of it and God took it and jammed it down your throat because you're such a charlatan and a liar.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. Well, here. Let's close the Burke segment, and I have a related story. Burke segment. How about Pastor Gerald Glenn in Chesterfield, Virginia? This guy is one of these guys who just was defiant. No, I'm not going to keep people from coming to church. Come on in. It's the house of God. He also said, and here's a quote from him, "I firmly believe that God is larger than this dreaded virus," and you can quote me on that. Now, he said that in an interview. He also says that he is regularly in contact and that God talks to him.
Oh,
okay. Right.
Yeah, and as a preacher, he has a link with God, and God has told him without any doubt that he's bigger than this virus, and all you got to do is trust in him. By the way, he's dead. He just died from the coronavirus. The reverend. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Pastor Glenn is dead.
Wow. Did he divulge how God talked to him? Like, does God, like, text him or call him? Or is
probably
it like
a fax machine.
Is it like an email?
No, they usually claim that they hear the voice of God.
Zoom?
No. They're closer than that. Their relationship is closer.
Oh, God texts
they
them.
They hear his voice.
He is it now.
So he's dead. I think you just need. It's like those snake handlers. I love those people down in Kentucky and Tennessee. That if you have enough religion, the snake bite won't kill you. They're dead.
I heard about this preacher in Israel, some bigwig over there. He said that the coronavirus was punishment for homosexuals and stuff like that, and only they would get it. And now he has the coronavirus.
Oh,
you know, well, so. Now we know he's gay.
Well, that settles it.
I mean,
wow. I find people like Ken Copeland and Jimmy Swaggart and Joyce Meyer and this is some of the most entertaining television. If you've already seen Breaking Bad three times and you're done with Sons of Anarchy and you watch Ozark, you got nothing else to do, go to that section on the guide of these evangelists and watch some of that stuff. It's the most entertaining. And if I'm offending you, if you're listening and you send money to these people and I'm offending you, I'm not sorry. Because somebody needs to wake you up to the fact that you are just shoveling money to people that are they're cheating you, they're lying to you, they're telling you stuff that's
terrible,
not true.
People.
They send you a piece of cloth that they blessed and say that God had anything to do with that rag they send you or that little vial of water. What's the matter with you?
And why is it that the creepiest people on earth look creepy? What, you never see like a good looking creepy person, right? Like this Ken Copeland.
Well,
this Ken Copeland. If you go remake the movie Poltergeist and that clown that was sitting on the end of the kid's bed, if you just put like Ken Copeland's head on that clown, it'd be just as creepy.
Oh,
it'd be
he just looks like one of those lap mannequins.
He does. It's hard to describe. I mean, his teeth are so white and his eyes are like so wide and he kind of stares at you with his mouth half open. It's he looks like he should be one of those Annabelle Unchained movies, you know, from the. These scary movies that they're making with this Annabelle doll. You can put the Ken Copeland doll right next to her. It could be like Ken and Barbie.
Right. If anything, they'd be...
COVID-19! Yeah, brother.
Yeah, Reverend.
Love him!
Sound like a kid, like a baby blowing up like, you know, a little dandelion or something.
He's gone.
You know, it's interesting. He had that same gravel in his voice that Ken Copeland had. I think they both got that thing, that corona.
No, that's
in their
that was Ken Copeland.
That was Ken Copeland.
Oh, that was Ken Copeland.
Yeah,
that's
that
right.
Was Ken Copeland.
Okay, that was Ken Copeland. At first, when you played it, it didn't sound quite like Copeland.
But he went, COVID-19.
Over the years, what he's done, Copeland has taken on, the best way to say this is he's taken on the sound of more of a black evangelist than he used to. He used to sound like that. Over time, they kind of decide, well, I need to get more of a black audience, a black following, so I'm going to have a little bit of a black dialect here, or whatever they think they need to do to get you. What they do is they defeat, I think, the very thing they're trying to tell us and teach us. They're trying to tell us about God, and that they tell, and by their actions and their bank accounts and their behavior, they almost do the opposite. They almost make you think, my goodness, if there was a God, this would be the first guy he would drop. He'd drop this guy in his tracks because he's telling people things I don't think God would want him to tell them. Like, no matter how little you have, give me most of it and you'll prosper. So enough of that. I had an idea. Did we close it? We closed it, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think so. We have
an idea. And my idea, we talked to Jim, and then I'm going to do a couple of bonus jokes. I think if ever there was a time for bonus jokes, it's now. So I'm just going to throw a couple of bonus jokes out. But first, we'll talk to Jim. Jim, welcome to 590 The Fan. How are you?
I'm great, Frank. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm fine, too. What's up?
Always pleasure to talk to you. My question to you is this. You were just talking about Kenneth Copeland and all those rip-off artists. Ernest Angley is another one that comes to mind as Slimeball. I'll be honest with you, I'll be tied up doing something, so I can't listen to the 4 o'clock hour like I normally do. But do you remember that movie? I think it was in the late 70s or early 80s. It was starred Deborah Winger and Steve Martin about how they exposed the preacher that was doing his rounds of tents. I forget what the Bible shows.
Steve Martin played the part, I believe, of the evangelist.
Yeah.
Right, and Deborah Winger and I forget who the other male character was that were exposing his hypocrisy and all his stuff. I can't remember the name of that movie. Leap of Faith. Thank you very much. That was one of the first movies to me that really brought out all the crap these guys go. I just want to say real quick, and I'll hang up, my Hall of Fame Slimeball ministers will always be, number one will be Ernest Angley, and number two has got to be Jim Baker. I'm going to hang up, listen to your comments. Thanks for taking my call, Frank. I appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you, Jim. And my first comment is his name is Angley, and I think that's by choice to make him sound angelic. His name is Ernest Angley, the most ridiculous clown that ever got behind a pulpit, and people just showered him with the money. Baker. We did a whole thing already on Baker and what he's doing.
Remember Benny Hinn? Is that
Benny Hinn's still at it. Yeah. Benny Hinn is still out there. He's still still going strong. So, here, just bonus jokes. That's all. Some would qualify as playhouse worthy. A couple almost make it but don't. And this one's a quick one. It's not even really a joke. What is the difference between Ellen DeGeneres and a Wheat Thin? The Wheat Thin is a snack cracker. Think about it, and now we move on.
Crack snacker?
Close. Okay. No, not close. That's it. Now, see, you're not supposed to.
Why do you get it? I have to say it out loud to get things. I don't get them. I don't have the
mind. Ellen is. Wheat Thin is a snack cracker. You got it.
Oh,
Ellen
my,
is
got
a
it.
Crack snacker. Very
crack
good.
Snacker.
Well, but you got it. That's all that matters. It took a little bit, crack but you snacker. Got her. So, yeah.
I got it.
There are a lot of similar jokes, like, hang on, it's a midget. I gotta be very careful.
Oh, yeah, this. Right. Yeah.
Has there ever been a midget joke that wasn't funny? Have you ever heard like a no? I never heard of a bad midget joke.
I think if you just say the word midget, it's funny to me. So, this blonde wife is tired of all the blonde jokes and think people talking about how stupid blondes are and they can't do anything right. So, she decides she's going to show her husband. They're fairly newlyweds. They've been married about a year and. She's going to show him that blondes can do things. So while he's at work, she decides she's going to paint a couple of rooms in the house. Now, this happens to be a hot summer day in St. Louis, and, you know, paint, you need to get some air in the room. You don't want to breathe. So she opens up the windows. Now it's really getting hot, and she's painting, and her husband comes home from work, and as he walks in the house, the distinctive smell of fresh paint, he can smell it, and he realizes that, and he walks into the living room, and there's his wife, his blonde wife, lying on the floor in a pool of sweat, and she's wearing like a ski parka, one of those down-filled parkas, over a leather jacket. And he revives her. She's almost about to die. He brings her around and says, what are you doing here? She says, painting the house. He says, you got a parka over a leather jacket. She said, all I did was follow the directions to set on the paint can. For best results, put on two coats. Blonde. Blonde joke. Next. Guy's birthday. 40th birthday. That's a big one. That's always a big one for some reason. 40. He turns 40, wakes up, he realizes that's my birthday, it's my 40th birthday. Now, this takes place back in the 50s, say, because there's a telegram involved. He goes to the door. It's the, you know, the, what was the,
Western Union?
Yeah, Western Union. It's a telegram guy, a little telegram hat, and he goes, you know, are you Ben Johnson? He goes, I am. And he says, well, Mr. Johnson, I have a telegram for you. He said, well, of course you do. It's my birthday. Singing telegram. He said, I have always wanted a singing telegram. And look at this. Finally, on my 40th birthday, go ahead, sing away. And the guy goes, sir, this is not a singing telegram company. This is, I'm with Western Union. This is, it's just a real telegram. And he said, no. It's my birthday. I want a singing telegram. Sing it. He's actually getting mad. And the telegram guy says, sir, again, he said, hey, pal. And he hands him a $20 bill. He said, maybe this will change your mind. All right. Sing me the telegram. It is my birthday. Guy says, okay. He opens the telegram. Last night, on the way home from work, your brother was killed in a fiery car crash.
Oh, man.
Wow.
That's terrible.
Well, he begged him to sing
it. Yeah, he did.
Hey, Dennis said that he has a bonus joke.
Oh.
Well, isn't that all right,
a bonus joke off?
Yeah.
Let me, okay, so, all right, here's another one. So these two priests decide they want to take a vacation, And they like to go somewhere where nobody knows their priest. You know, every day they wear the black suit and the collar. And it's not uncommon for priests to want to get away and just not be priests, just be people. So they decide they're going to go to Hawaii. Let's just get away, far away, and have a real vacation. So before as soon as the plane lands, before they do anything, they go to a store and they buy the most outrageous vacation clothes, like Hawaiian shirt, something you'd never normally see a priest in. Sandals, sunglasses, loud shirts with parrots on them, palm trees. They go out on the beach in all their tourist clothes, and they're sitting on beach chairs, having a couple of drinks, gorgeous day, and this drop-dead, gorgeous blonde walks by them in the skimpiest little bikini, and what a rockin' body.
Yeah.
And she walks by these two priests, and she says, one at a time, she says, "Good morning, Father. Good morning, Father." And she walks on by, and they look at each other. And the one priest says, they say, "How in the world could she possibly tell? There must be something about us. We didn't do a good enough job. Let's go back to the tourist store." They go back and get louder shirts and more vacation-y, obnoxious clothing. Back out on the beach the next day. Same blonde. This time she walks by him, and she's topless. Just the tiniest little thong bottom part. And now they get to see that the body that looked good before looks even better. And she walks by, right by them, looks at him and says, "Good morning, fathers." And one of them says, "Hang on." He said, "Sorry." No, one of them said, "Yeah, I'm not. It's not over."
That long pause got me. Sorry.
So the one priest looks at the other, and as she's walking away, one of them says, "Excuse me, miss, young lady." And she turns around. And he says, "Okay, we're priests. All right, we are priests. But how in the world did you know that we're priests?" She says, "Father, it's me, Sister Mary Frances." She's on vacation, too.
Oh, man.
Whoa. Dennis is actually on the phone.
Now, Dennis I'm not finished. I got one.
Hold on, Dennis. Right. He's not finished.
Tell Dennis I'm almost finished. All right. So, guy goes into an adult store, and for those of you who don't know it, there are adult dolls. There are inflatable dolls. There are these lifelike, really expensive dolls. Well, this guy doesn't have the money for one of those dolls that is really human-like, where the flesh is like, so he has to go the inflatable route. And some of those are, you know, to a guy who needs that companionship, they're not bad. And he goes in the store and he tells the guy, he says, the guy says, "Don't be embarrassed, man. You're an adult store. What do you need?" He goes, I want an inflatable doll." The guy behind the counter says, "Okay. Male or female?" He says, "Hey, pal. I'm hetero." And the guy behind the counter says, "Look, man, don't take it personally. I need to ask. A lot of people have different tastes, different desires. I had to ask." "Okay. I'm assuming female." You're damn right. "Female. Female inflatable doll." The guy behind the counter says, "Black or white?" And the customer says, "Oh, man," he says, "now if I say white, I'm going to seem racist, I guess. I don't think it matters, but let me just flip a coin. Heads white, tails black." Flips the coin, heads. Okay, white. A white inflatable female doll. And the guy behind the counter says, "Christian, Buddhist, atheist, Jewish, or Muslim extremist doll?"
Oh, God.
The customer says, he says, "Oh, my goodness, too many choices." He says, I don't think it matters what religion inflatable doll is supposed to be. It doesn't matter. There can't be any difference." And he goes, "Well, the only difference is in the price. They're all the same price, except the Muslim extremist doll. All the other dolls are $800. It's $4,000. And he says, "What?" He goes, "Yeah." He says, "Why so much more for the Muslim extremist doll?" And the guy goes, "Because it blows itself up."
Oh, my God.
Wow. Thank you.
And now we go to Dennis. Dennis, welcome to 590 The Fan. How are you?
I'm good. I'm AM and a PM.
Thank you very much. What's going on?
You guys all might have heard it. Load the shotgun, Frank.
All right, hang on. I got to grab it. All right, go right ahead.
Buddy of mine just told me this. He says he said you guys would know who this is. Some guy named John Sadley. He said they'll know who it is.
John Sadley.
John Sadley. So yeah. He mumbles his words when he talks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know.
So John Sadley was in a hotel room with a really, really, really old lady.
Well, that sounds like.
And you put her in. And. They're both getting off the bed. They're putting their clothes on. And the old lady says, I don't have any idea, honey, what you said for the last 3.5 minutes, but I know you liked it. Now go ahead and put your clothes on, and I'll go get your 2 rolls of toilet paper. You get it?
No, yeah, we
was that
yeah.
The payment? Is that no. What it was?
Yeah, that's the punchline. That was the payment.
Sorry.
Now, don't be sorry. Don't ever be sorry, Dennis, because a wonderful thing has happened.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
If you liked it, that's really
that's
all that
matters,
man.
Did John Hadley tell you that? Tell that to
John Sadley.
John Sadley.
Dude, let me tell you this.
Yeah, Dan, that was we're talking about a fictitious person who doesn't really exist.
Oh.
62 hours, 80s, man. Yeah. Well,
Dennis, what did we learn here? You learned probably quicker than anybody could ever learn. That comedy is just not that easy. It can be tough.
Sometimes it is.
Well, but you enjoyed it, and that's all that matters to us. So
okay. Good
thank
deal.
You, Dennis. Thank you, Dennis.
See you guys.
Yeah. I know a lot of you sitting out there, you're thinking, well, anybody could do what they do. Well, there you go. I give you Dennis as an example. You know, it's kind of like, and I've never thought this, but I know people who think, I could do stand-up comedy. And you can go see them at comedy clubs on amateur night or whatever. They get up, and they actually think they've come up with a funny routine. Usually not. I would never do that, ever. As anybody, Dan, you have.
Yes, I have.
Tim, do you ever get up at a comedy club and try to do stand-up comedy?
I did. I went to St. Louis's funniest amateur at the Helium Comedy Club about 3 years ago and had about 30 friends and family show up. And
see,
it was
that's smart because you got a built-in laughter
right,
crowd.
But it was the most nerve-wracking thing I'd ever done in my life, and I won't do it again.
Do you remember any of your routine? How long was your set?
Well,
how long was it?
You got 6 minutes to do
wow,
your set.
Wow, that's a long time, though. Yeah,
thank you, Limey, because I was going to say, to anybody who thinks, well, that's not very long. No, that's an eternity if you're doing stand-up comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So give me any line. Do you remember any of it? You know you do.
Well, I asked if there was any transvestites in the crowd, and I said, and the reason I want to know why is because when everybody throws their panties up on stage at me after my act's over, I want to be able to shun the ones that are, maybe have a pee stain in the front. That was kind of my opening. And actually, people laughed at it. I mean,
I tell you the funniest part of what you just did was when you said, are there any transvestites in the crowd? That, to me, is funny. I mean, that's funny. You don't even need to follow it with anything. And it actually, I think, would be funny if you just said, any transvestites in the crowd? And just left it there and then just moved on. And they'd be waiting for whatever followed.
Well,
I think that's a punchline.
My mother was in the crowd, and she's losing her hearing. Like bad, losing her hearing. And so I did this joke about peace sign pouty face, about how, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know, every time I do this peace sign pouty face, where I like to make the peace sign and then I kind of purse my lips out, like the pouty face peace sign.
Right,
I said, the reason for that is because my mother's in the crowd and she's deaf and she won't know whether to laugh whether I do that. And so then I kept, like, if I would say a joke and I did something that was kind of funny or whatever, and, you know, people would laugh, I would do that and say, Mom, laugh! And I would, like, scream in her face, and people thought that was funny, that I was screaming at my mother to laugh at me on stage, because she was really there.
Was this a contest where somebody won first prize?
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
did you win?
I did not, because, you know, all these comedians were drinking. heavily before they went up on stage. And I was at an extended period of sobriety in my life at the time, and I had to go up there stone cold sober.
It's like when Lloyd Bridges in Airplane says, "Well, I picked the wrong time to quit drinking."
Exactly.
Sniffing glue.
I think if I'd have had a beer or two, I'd have been a little less nervous. But I think I came across as nervous. And they tallied up the votes, and I think of the 13 comedians, I came in sixth, and the top three got to move on to the next round or whatever. But it was nerve wracking.
No, I would never. I would never try. Well, I don't say never. Somebody goes, "Here's $1 million." Well,
they did was they put you all off to the side like a bunch of pigs in a pen, right? Like you're social distancing from the crowd, right? And then, you know, the guy would come out and they would bring you down one at a time. So you're like you're in a room with a bunch of, or you're off to the side actually of the bar area with all the comedians, and then they would like bring you down one by one, and you sit in this room all by yourself as you listen to the person up on stage, and you know you're next. You know, and that was only a 6-minute.
How many people were in the crowd? Do you remember, like 100?
Oh, at least 100. 150 probably.
Wow.
That's a decent crowd. Because
each comedian will probably try and bring somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Gonna have their own crowd.
But it doesn't always help. Let's say you bring somebody for support and to laugh at you. And it's even, I think, worse if you tell a joke and one person, it's obvious that that's your dad or your wife or brother or something.
I was doing fine except for the very last thing I did that I thought was funny that didn't come off as well as I wanted. Was when I did my imitation of Chris Rock trying to talk down a crack hoe on her price.
That sounds funny.
Well, I thought it was funny, but you have to make eye contact when you're up on stage doing that, and it just so happened that the entire front row was full of black people, and none of them laughed at it, and it was kind of an awkward thing, and I was like, I'm doing good, fall off the cliff.
Oh boy,
it was a bad ending. I had a good first seven innings, and I got tired in the eighth.
Well, I'll never. I say never. I don't think I'll ever know that experience because I'm just barely smart enough to know a couple of things. And one is stand-up comedy, to me, is if you want to pick a difficult career, pick that one. Because the chances of you making it, I don't know how many comedy clubs there are in the country. Thousands. And every night, well, except now, nobody's doing anything anywhere, but every night, they've got amateurs somewhere, and they get up and they do their thing, and out of all those thousands and thousands of people who really do think they're funny, very few make it.
There is a guy from Kirkwood, and we're broadcasting live from Kirkwood today. There is a guy who was a state wrestling champion from Kirkwood High School in the late 80s. His name was Greg Warren.
Oh, and, I just saw his video. I know
and,
Greg Warren.
And he's a year older than me. He wrestled my brother, who was a very competitive and almost won state wrestling championship himself. And I was living in Lexington, Kentucky at the time, and I happened to take a date to a comedy club one night, and all of a sudden there's Greg Warren. I'm like, this is the same guy. I'm like, this is what this guy does?
He's funny. Hmm.
And he's so dry. And I walked up to him, and I bought his CD that he had for sale afterward. And this, you know, Greg graduated high school in probably 86, and then I probably saw him in 2003. So
right.
I said, Greg, I said, what, you've been doing this for 17 years? He said, yeah. He said, it's a grind. I said, well, how many nights are you on the road? He goes, you know, I don't even bother to count anymore, probably 300. I said, all those nights on the road for set, because you go from city to city to city to city to city.
Wow.
And you just keep doing it all, and you do the tour, and if the club books you, they like you, they either bring you back once a year or twice a year, basically, right, is the way it works. And man, that's a grind.
No. It also requires extra thick skin. You know, when you're up there and a minute into it, you hear, "You suck. Mm-hmm. Get off the stage." No, let's see what you. Yeah, let's see what you're made of.
Right. And okay, coming up with new material and you know, and always trying to do that. You've seen him, Dan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Greg Warren. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's funny.
Yeah, it's one thing to tell a joke. Telling a joke is the easy way out if you want to get up. And I've done it. I mean, you almost can't lose because the joke has been told all over the world for two guys going to a bar or whatever. It's not original material, so you're relying on sort of tested material.
I've seen you work a room, though. Like, before we went on the Europe cruise, and you worked a room, you'd be a storytelling comedian, kind of like Seinfeld was. So Seinfeld wasn't a boom, boom, you know, kind of a comedian. You know, he was a storytelling guy, and it would just keep adding on layer after layer after layer. You could do it if you wanted to.
Not as well as he does, but you're right. That's really all he does is just observational humor, and he does it clean, which I admire.
Right.
Because there aren't many of those guys left. All right, here's what's coming up. I can do a little business. Dan Buff is going to join us. I have a couple of things to mention that I have rediscovered or discovered or been watching. There is a documentary I mentioned yesterday. We'll see if Mr. Buffa knows about that. It has to do with the Skidmore, Missouri shooting from back in, I think, 1980. It was either 80 or 81. I think it was 1980. So we'll talk about that, and we'll mention again the it was 81, actually. July of 81, a hot day in Skidmore, Missouri, and I think not just the country, but the world was talking about this story, and obviously they still are, because this documentary, I think, just came out. We'll talk about that, and some other stuff, so we're glad you're with us. Johnny Londoff Chevrolet is open for business. The service department, there's nothing you need service-wise that you can't just make an appointment to go in and have taken care of. I'm not even sure you have to make an appointment. I would do that just to be smart, not get there and have them say, well, it'll be a couple of hours, but knock yourself out. What else are you doing, really? A lot of you don't have to go to work right now. Get your car serviced because you're going to need it, and you're going to be depending on it hopefully soon when everything goes back to normal. So I think the only thing that's different is you can't congregate in the waiting room like you used to, so you can go outside, you can have somebody pick you up later, whatever. Service is there for you. Now, buying a car, yes, you can buy a new Chevy. You can buy a pre-owned vehicle. You have two pieces of inventory to choose from. The mothership, which is in Florissant, and then the new, still relatively new, Johnny Londoff Autoplex in St. Peter's, where it's nothing but pre-owned. You just need to make an appointment with a salesperson. You can still drive the vehicle. In fact, if you're really still freaked out about, you know, going somewhere and having contact with too many people, they'll bring the car to you. Go online, check it out, see what you like. They'll work it out. They're selling cars every day, and they're servicing cars every day. Johnny Londoff Chevrolet. You can shop 24/7 at their website, which is Londoff.com. I want to make sure I don't forget to talk about a couple. There's a story. I read it this morning. It didn't take place here. It took place in France. But the same situation has taken place here many, many, many times. And here's the deal. Fighter jets. Depending on who you are or who you know, you can get a ride in a fighter jet. I was invited years ago to go up in an F-18 or whatever it is, and I turned it down. I said, no, I don't like roller coasters. I don't like the kind of G-forces put on. I know exactly what that would feel like, and I also know people who have done it, people who are pilots who have done it, and they ended up grabbing the barf bag immediately because it turns you inside out. So I turned it down. There is a story of a guy who, as a gift, a friend of his got him a ride. You can pay, apparently, and this was in France, to go up in a fighter jet. That is all I'm going to tell you. Wait till later when you hear what happened when this guy went up as just a civilian to go for a ride in a fighter jet. It's way beyond throwing up. So that ought to be enough to keep you where you are. And then if we have time, who else is left-handed in the room? Anybody?
I am.
Okay, that's it? Just the two of us?
Yeah.
Well, here's how unusual that is. 50% of the show is left-handed. Only 10% of the population is left-handed. I tend to think that sounds high to me.
I'm right-handed.
Tim, doesn't that sound that you find that one out of every 10 people is left-handed? I don't.
Dan Buffa said he's left-handed.
The reason why I'm left-handed is because my mother's left-handed, and she was always self-conscious about it. When I was a kid, she kept putting stuff in my left hand. So she kind of forced me into being left-handed.
Well, you were abused. That's child abuse.
It is. Throw your mom into the bus.
Yeah, I know.
Explains a lot.
It's weird, though, because I write left-handed, but I throw a ball right-handed. So it's.
When I was in school, kids were forced. Like, if they were left-handed, they were forced to write with their right hand.
Kidding me.
They even had, like, this little thing on a pencil.
That's true. I'm left-handed. Somebody suggested to my dad when I was really, really young, you got to change that boy and make him right-handed. You don't want him to be left-handed. So I got a great left-handed story for you. We got plenty to do, plenty to talk about. Dan Buff is on the way. I will give you numbers after the news so you can call with your suggestions of things to watch while we're all still quarantined. It is 4 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
Covering St. Louis.
I cannot recommend it highly enough.
590 The Fan. More than just sports. KFNS Wood River, St. Louis.
NBC News Radio. I'm Tom Roberts. The U.S. death toll from the coronavirus is topping 25,000. Johns Hopkins University researchers add total confirmed cases of COVID-19 are approaching 600,000. Worldwide, cases are nearing 2 million with more than 125,000 deaths. President Trump claims the U.S. is in the process of defeating COVID-19. At a White House event today, the president did note how powerful the coronavirus pandemic is.
Not since then have we seen anything like this, and